You're listening to the BBC World Service. This is NewsHour, coming to you live from our studios in central London with James Kamara-Sami. Time now for our regular look at climate change. And this week we're going to consider the risks and potential rewards of man-made responses to the problem, from sending reflective mirrors into space to seeding the oceans, for example. Well, at last week's UN Environment Assembly, countries failed to reach a consensus on how to scrutinise these technological solutions to climate change, which come under the umbrella term of solar geoengineering. In some quarters, they've been promoted as an alternative to, for example, cutting carbon emissions, with critics warning that that could actually encourage the use of fossil fuels. Well, joining me in the studio is David Keith, Professor of Applied Physics at Harvard, a leading authority on geoengineering. We're also joined on the line by Jacqueline McGlade, a Professor of Sustainable Development at University College London and a former Executive Director of the European Environment Agency. Welcome, both of you, to the programme. Let's start, if we can, with what the UN failed to agree on last week, this idea of scrutinising geoengineering. Do we need more scrutiny and coordination, David Keith?
Absolutely. Humans don't make good decisions when they hide things. And I think whatever you think about this, we'll do a better job if we talk about it openly, if we study it openly, and if we debate openly how on earth we're going to govern it.
And just what we're talking about, I gave a couple of examples, but I'm sure you have a long list of them. But what are the main examples that you would single out that would have the most impact on climate change?
So I think we're talking about solar geoengineering, which is the idea that humanity might be able to alter the reflectivity of the Earth directly to reduce some of the impacts of accumulated carbon dioxide, so that it's possible, but certainly not a known thing, that a combination of emissions cut to zero and solar geoengineering might have less climate risk than just emissions cuts.
Might.
Yeah.
Jacqueline McGlade, what's your perspective?
Well, I think, in a sense, I want to combine the conversation around two of these areas, which is the carbon aspect, which is, I think, carbon removal still represents a very, very good avenue to explore, as well as the solar radiation management. And I think at the UNEA meeting, the United Nations Environment Assembly in Nairobi, the challenge was that the actual resolution, which was tabled by Switzerland, in a sense had very, I won't say loose language, but it was language that wasn't really based on a very hard technical definition. And in a sense, that got in the way, because many people know that within the UN system and amongst many conventions, in fact, geoengineering has already been discussed. So I think it was more the setting of where should we discuss geoengineering, rather than saying, oh, well, we're never going to discuss it and this resolution will never come back. It is already on the table, has been discussed. And in fact, there are definitive and de facto moratoriums in place that really say we need to tread very carefully.
Well, what are the risks then?
Well, for me, I think the risk area that really jumps up is when you talk about solar radiation management. In a sense, let me just pick up one off the list, stratospheric aerosol injection. There is definitely a downside from the ecosystems, which would be you may potentially create acidification of the soils if you use sulfate aerosols. So there are lots of consequential downstream effects if you intervene in a system such as the atmosphere. On the other side, the carbon removal, there we're on, in a sense, much firmer ground, because we do understand the planting of trees, weathering of, sort of enhanced weathering. I think the challenge, though, is whether these things will ever work fast enough.
David Keith, those are scientific risks. There's also the political dimension to this, isn't there? And the question of whether climate change skeptics might use solar geoengineering as a way to say, well, we don't need to reduce carbon emissions, or indeed, some are suggesting it could actually lead to more use of fossil fuels, because people will say, well, we have human ways of mitigating it.
Talking about climate change skeptics is avoiding the central issue. That the issue is that big fossil, big oil, who have immediate near-term self-interest in blocking emissions cuts to the disadvantage of humanity as a whole, will exploit anything they can to argue for not having laws to prevent us using the atmosphere as a waste dump for carbon. And they will certainly exploit research or development of solar geoengineering technologies as a way to argue that we don't need emissions cuts. That's false. If you want a stable climate, you must cut emissions to zero in the long run. But it is an argument people will make. In practice, almost no one is making that now. And there's a lot of falsehoods going around about the idea that the solar geoengineering research community, which I'm a part, is somehow funded by fossil fuel interests, which is nonsense.
So for you, it's a combination. You need, you'd like the geoengineering to work in tandem with cuts to emissions.
I wouldn't even say that. I don't think we know for sure that it would make sense to ever do solar geoengineering. What I think we know is that from all major climate models, that there is evidence that it could substantially reduce risks, and so we should study it a lot more and try and begin deliberations about how we would govern it.
And is it possible to explain in layman's terms briefly how solar geoengineering works as a concept?
Sure. So one method is which is referred to is to put aerosols like sulfuric acid into the stratosphere. And the evidence from as I say, really all climate models is that it could reduce changes to water availability, reduce extreme storms like tropical cyclones, reduce extreme temperatures and extreme precipitation, and do that in a pretty uniform way around the world. The big question is, are those models in some way systematically wrong? There are a bunch of risks like ozone depletion, and the acid rain risk actually turns out to be pretty much a non-issue. There's been a bunch of papers on that. But we have to ask all these questions and ask them in an open way internationally with a much broader group looking at them before we should believe any of this.
Jacqueline McGlade, what do you think? What is the correct forum then, or the most effective forum for discussing all these issues?
Well, I mean, I totally agree. I think that the risks need to be sort of tethered out and really attached to all the different technologies. But there is a genuine risk, which is when you think about sustainable development, and why I'm going to say the answer is within the UN setting, within a multilateral setting, and that is that you inadvertently take a risk that you can disproportionately affect people who are very poor, who have limited access to resources and land. And if something were to go wrong, then essentially they would be penalized much more heavily. So I think the governance issue really is the thing that we should keep firmly in our minds, because the human race, the population is inevitably very creative and can always come up with new technologies and new ideas, but it's how we govern it. So my sort of fundamental belief is that within the UN setting, it is absolutely essential. So essentially now, UN environment could potentially bring forward what I think would be a balanced assessment, looking at both the engineering and looking at the risks. But ultimately, I think it needs to be looked at within the context of sustainable development, which means it then goes back to the level of the Secretary General and the whole of the United Nations and all of the nation states themselves.
David Keith, you'd like to come back.
We need to look at risks on both sides. There's no question there are risks of solar geoengineering, but there are also enormous risks of having CO2 in the atmosphere. And people often imagine that cutting emissions solves the problem. Cutting emission stops us putting CO2 in the atmosphere. It does not stop climate risk. And in fact, the evidence, while we should absolutely worry about the disenfranchised, the poor getting affected, the overwhelming evidence is that they are more affected by extreme climate risks. And the evidence to date is they would benefit more from solar geoengineering. And I think it's really important to be clear-eyed about the underlying evidence that these technologies could substantially reduce risks to the most vulnerable people and ecosystems on the planet, which is the reason many of us are interested.
David Keith, we have to leave it there, Professor of Applied Physics at Harvard, and Jacqueline McGlade, Professor of Sustainable Development at University College London. Thank you both for joining us here on NewsHour. Do stay with us here on the programme. Plenty more to come in the second half. You're listening to NewsHour, coming to you live from London with James Kumarasamy. Coming up next on the programme, we have an interview with the Prime Minister of New Zealand. First, though, it is our daily look at the world of business and the absorption of one entertainment